The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 7. Politic. She rushed home, crossing the bridge over the Acheron, past the Elm of False Dreams, through the mucky banks of the Vale of Mourning and the orchard to get home faster, so she had to stop and shake the pumice dust off her sandals before she entered the palace. Hermes was waiting in the loggia overlooking the gardens, impatient, as always.
Great. You're here.
Good morning to you too, cousin.
Aha. Yeah.
Listen. The cave of Cumi gets water in it every time there is a storm. It needs a new levee to fend off tidal flooding. And consolidation. That project had sat on the shelf way too long, if you ask me. So, what's the holdup? The Cumean Sibyl thinks making any changes equals blaspheming Apollo. She barricaded herself in the cave and refuses to prophesy. She threatened to burn the last three books, too. To tell you the truth, I think it's a shakedown. Greedy wretch's demands for coin never cease. Well, look on the bright side, she can't burn them if they're underwater. Not that it would be an improvement.
Don't joke, cousin, it's serious.
The woman is on a mission. Where do I come into all of this? I need to borrow Cerberus for a few days. You're not going to endanger my Cerberus over three made-up scrolls. So she wants to burn them, let her.
We can't.
People would panic, the temple offerings will wane, we'll be in default.
You're resourceful.
You can always remake them from scratch.
Nobody would be the wiser.
Or better yet, sneak in and steal them.
You are the patron of thieves.
If you can't, who will?
You flatter me, he looked down, pleased.
Alas, everybody is on alert now. Even I couldn't sneak in unnoticed.
What for? Do you need my Cerberus?
She wrote an omen somewhere that if somebody comes into the world with the Cerberus and has the obedience of the latter, that is a sign from Mount Olympus itself, and whatever the messenger has to say has the power of divine law.
Everybody knows that omen.
She can't change her mind now. So you're going to parade around with the Cerberus telling everybody Olympus will be well pleased with logistical upgrades to the levies?
Persephone started laughing.
No. I'm going to bring Cerberus to the Agora and prophesy that without appeasing the wrath of Poseidon, who required grand walls to be built on the edges of his realm in his honor, to separate his kingdom from the kingdom of Hades, the whole underworld and its monsters will surface into their reality.
You know how terrified humans are of Hades.
Gee, thanks. So, should Cerberus fail to inspire, maybe I could trouble you for a couple of sirens, possibly the Chimera, that should get the point across.
She wrote about her too.
So, why aren't you discussing this with Hades?
He's the boss of them all.
It would be so much better for everyone concerned if Hades had no knowledge of all this brouhaha.
Plausible deniability and all that.
I can always say I stole the beasts from Hades, if you don't mind the damage to your reputation.
I don't know, Hermes.
Wouldn't it be more reasonable to persuade everyone to do the right thing? Because that went so well every other time we tried.
Remember Athena?
Greek women lost the right to vote over being so reasonable.
Very well then, you can take Cerberus, but I want him back, happy and unharmed.
Poor pup couldn't eat for a week after his last outing into the world.
He's very sensitive, you know.
And let's hold off on the Chimera for now, no need for a heavy hand.
Thank you, cousin.
Hermes turned on his feet to leave. He couldn't sit still and reviled small talk as a disdainful waste of intellect. Words were made to carry meaning in his views. What was the point of throwing them around just to make noise?
Oh. And welcome home.
He said, right before he left.
What did he want?
Hades came through the door from the adjacent room, door which just happened to have been left wide open the entire time. He wanted to borrow Cerberus, Persephone replied.
Wife, didn't you hear the messenger?
I'm not supposed to know about this, as I'm sure you won't, my love.
Am I supposed to know about your Mirror Maze project?
I don't know.
Are you?
Better not.
How is it going?
Not so hot.
That place will drive anyone mad. I don't yet have a way to mitigate that problem. Have you heard from Ares? Not directly. He went to your mother to complain and sold her on your being gullible and my having put you up to this. He's been whining to anyone who would listen. He looked at Persephone, who started to feel a little tense. Don't worry about it, I'll fix it. Whatever it involves can't be worse than running Tartarus, his brow creased as clouds passed over it. Persephone wrapped her arms around him, quietly watching the gardens in the distance. The world never ceased to seep its toxic poison into her happiness. Many found it indecent, even, as if not being constantly miserable and unfulfilled was a sin in itself. I'm glad you're home, Hades whispered. Persephone snuggled closer for protection. Master, Erebus spoke, on bended knee, the Titans are rioting again, you're needed in Tartarus. Duty calls, he smiled at his wife, kissed her on the forehead, and walked behind Erebus to deal with the situation. Persephone watched him leave from the loggia and then changed her garment to get ready to meet with Hecate. The two of them had spearheaded a revitalization project for the Stygian marshes, to restore their native flora and reduce soil runoff. There couldn't have been a more compelling place in all of Hades than the Stygian marshes, the place where all its rivers met, for, as I said, Hades was a water realm. All the waters of the underworld ended up here eventually, feeding untold numbers of creatures and plants, in a place as unfit for human habitation as anyone could imagine. Hecate's involvement in the project was not entirely disinterested. For a long time the world had been suffering from a scarcity of underworld plants and missed out on their potent essences which enabled the work of the healers and the visions of the oracles. All of these plants hailed from right there, from the banks of the Acheron, near the Gates of Shade, where the Dark Goddess's home, a deceptively foreboding castle, gleamed in the scant light, and the Goddess of Witchcraft was looking forward to seeing her beloved mandrakes, aconites, belladonnas, henbanes, and datura's thrive and flourish once more. The mandrakes in particular were firing her interest, with them being known as Hecate's flowers and all, and she acknowledged and protected all those involved in the works of magic who had earned the mandrakes' obedience and respect. Their ghostly lavender blossoms glowed even brighter against the dark waters of Lake Avernus, bringing some solace to the poor souls who were lost and cursed to roam its banks for decades. Occasionally, Hecate took pity on some of these unfortunates, giving them shelter in her home and even granting them safe passage to the land of the living, if only for a few brief hours, and on very special nights. During Persephone's early years in the Nether Realms, Hecate had taught the young goddess her craft, and thus she had earned the latter's admiration and respect. The queen had a deep and genuine affection for her, considered her an elder and a mentor, and sought her wisdom whenever situations demanded a broader perspective. So Persephone abandoned her diaphanous linen chiton and her precious belt for a rough-hewn jute garment which fully covered her arms and her legs, and exchanged her delicate golden sandals for heavy clogs, an attire which was much better suited to brave the swamp and the fearsome thorns and poison of its rugged plants. She left behind her necklace and her golden rings and bracelets, braided her hair tight, and covered it with a hood, so it wouldn't get tangled in the long cords of the ivy or the tendrils of the smilax, and went outside, where Hecate was waiting. We all have a purpose in the world, and Persephone's was to rule over the flourishing of the plant kingdom, and that meant all the plants, including those gifted with dark powers. In the world of plants, there is no good and evil. It is the mind and will of humans and the way the latter use them that divides them as such. The mandrakes were powerful and proud plants, which could heal as well as kill. They enabled visions and stirred appetites, and they heightened fertility. They were rare and choosy about the places they grew in, and therefore precious and worthy of protection. Their cheerful golden yellow fruits, which looked like little apples, welcomed the two from afar with their delightful fragrance, so exuberant they were in their joy to see their mistresses. It was said the scent of mandrake fruit was a powerful aphrodisiac. At any rate, it was intoxicating, with its sweetness of red apple and its powdery smell of violets and iris root. As they drew nearer, the potent sulfurous odor of the swamp could knock down a horse, and Persephone knew it would take several baths and applications of sweet-smelling oils to get that rancid smell out of her hair. Sometimes useful things come in horridly odorous packages. The swamp was home to many species of plants, all beloved by Persephone, a and fortunately for them, the plants didn't have a sense of smell. Their fragrance counterbalanced the sulfurous odor of the swamp, making it almost bearable. After all, stench and perfume are two opposites of the same whole, and unifying the opposites was the very essence of magic.